furlong turf race. So I'm very interested to see how this race is ridden. And I know that if it shapes up on the track as it does on paper, things should set up very well for significant form. My one kind of price horse to use is Rose Flower, who had a, she's going to have to improve, no doubt about it, but she had a nightmare trip in the Autumn Days last year. She probably should have won that race, given that she got completely locked in traffic on the inside, and when she finally got clear just inside the eighth pole, she absolutely flew. And by that point, Eric Hansel had opened the race up on Saratoga Treasure in really what ended up being a brilliant ride. So that was a very different turf course than what they'll run on tomorrow, regardless of how much rain falls over the next 24 hours or so. I think significant forms will clearly the horse to beat, and then you want to use Newspaper of Record, and I'll use Rose Flower as a backup.
Yeah, a couple of candidates at a couple of different double-digit prices. Saratoga Treasure makes her seasonal debut, the five-year-old mare for Mrs. Generazio, and David Donk, last seen winning that Autumn Days, and in fact, her efforts against Open Company, you know, at the end of last year was very good. And Get Mother a Rose, who we went to town with over the winter, you know, loved her going into that South Beach and had, you know, plenty of trouble and, you know, had to wait on an opening and such. And then Junior Alvarado came through and got that win in the Honey Fox. I'm quite willing to, you know, to come back to Get Mother a Rose as well. She doesn't owe me or listeners anything. So I thought this was, you know, I thought this was fun because, you know, you got Chad's presence in here and they're going to draw so much money. There's going to be, you know, some horses that absolutely float into the stratosphere.
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, I wanted to try Get Mother of Rose, obviously, having made money on her in the past. And I thought things broke her way, certainly in the Honey Fox. She was bad in the Sand Springs. I know she steadied a little bit early, but, I mean, he was asking her around the turn. She had nothing. And Tom Bush horses, in general, perform better in Florida than they do in New York. However, she's a horse, again, you're talking about having proven form that will win this race. She has it. And she's one of only a few who you can say that about. And I think if you have the bankroll flexibility, then she's one that you want to include for that reason alone.
Second half of the Empire Six, and we should also mention the Westchester and the Intercontinental are the first two legs of the Cross Country Pick Five. We talked to Marty about that allowance group, then the Carter, and then they go back to Churchill for the Dogwood as the last leg. But let's talk about the Carter, the sprinting grade one early half of the year, and this frequently you know, brings together an interesting group, and it's certainly the case this year.
Yeah, no doubt about it, and you know, for horse players that have been, we've been dining on some day-old leftovers for a few months, we're certainly getting a buffet tomorrow. There's no question about it. With all the multi-race bets, the Empire Six, the Pick Five today, it's great. So the Carter is a fascinating bunch of you know, grade two-ish horses that are looking to step up, and I'm very intrigued to see. I shouldn't really talk that way about Mind Control, who is a grade one winner. But he's a horse, I think, that you still, you know, I think the last year's Alan Jerkins was a little bit about Chancelot stopping more so than it was Mind Control winning this blanket photo. So I would love to see Mind Control step up. I think he's a really, really nice horse. I picked Vekoma. I think Vekoma is a horse that has always had a ton of ability. I thought his comeback race at Gulfstream was awesome. And I think the plan from that point forward was to figure out how to get him into a grade one. I think he drew ideally on the outside. There's very, very little speed in here, and that should certainly work to his advantage. In fact, if you're a Timeform US user and you look at the pace projector, the thought is that Firenze Fire is going to be put on the lead, and I'm not sure if I buy that. So I think there's actually a world in which Vekoma could be on the lead or very close to it. I hope that's the case. I think if that ends up being the case, I'm almost certain he'll win. You have to use Firenze Fire, although, I mean, this situation is very, very difficult to navigate. With all due respect to Kelly Breen, you know, getting a horse like this who had some very much, let's just say, SGF 1000 induced performances, specifically at Belmont, this is a tough ask. So I've always liked this horse. I think Kelly Breen is a good horseman, so I'm hopeful that Firenze Fire runs back well, but it's a total guessing game. I think you have to use him. He did finish 2019 favorably and certainly ran a bang up race in the General George. You know, Performer is a horse that's coming back off the bench also for Sugar McGehee. This horse finished 2019 very impressively as well, beating Tax in the Discovery. I think was a horse that was on many people's lists for 2020 in terms of being a graded state caliber horse. I'm interested to see him start in the Carter. I thought this was a horse that they might look to be a little bit more of a distance type with, but you know, they have to start somewhere. And I think it's a sign of confidence that he ended up in this spot versus being somewhere else. And then you have the aforementioned Mind Control, who's a must-use. I think most people are going to be four deep in here unless you have a strong opinion on one of those four. It's basically 1, 2, 10, 11 for me, and I'll probably use American Anthem and Network Effect as backups because both of them are capable on their best days. They're just not quite up to the par of or the level of those big four.
No, well stated all around. Let's get to the late action, and you've got a state bred allowance group that's quite nice, and Baffert taking the opportunity to send the $900,000 tail of the union east and take advantage of the state bred conditions. This reminds me of the who was the Peter Urton New York bred that
Giant Expectations.
Giant Expectations, thank you, that came on Belmonte or the week before Belmonte and then ran back on Belmonte. That was great. This is the same kind of scenario. And there was also a Redham. There was a Redham horse that Doug O'Neill had that was sent to Hennig that had one name, that had a one-word name, and he was like 0 for 16 as a maiden, but he was a New York bred, and he finally came to New York. This is probably about 5 years ago or 6 years ago.
I remember
see
the
this
horse
happen.
You're talking about. I can't remember right? His name, but yeah, and he did. He broke his maiden very quickly. Actually, speaking of that, very quickly, there's a Redham horse trained by Doug O'Neill early on this card. That's a first time starter. Looks very impressive. Worked 9-4 at Ocala last April of 2019. But this is Tale of the Union being in this race. Obviously, was very interesting. And looking at the past performances, I was like, one thing doesn't look like the others. In that, this horse obviously had a big problem after his debut, and I mean, would have been anybody's. Almost Breeders' Cup caliber horse after that big debut win as a two-year-old. So, yeah, I mean, you're still guessing what he has. I think it's pretty safe to say, looking at the PPs of horses like Oil Can Knight, Knee Deep in Snow, and Galilean, that he's taking an enormous drop in class. He's a Baffert horse that has speed, so you wonder if he's going to get hooked up in a little bit of a pace battle. These 14-horse fields generally do have a lot of pace players. It all depends on what happens out of the gate. But you have horses like Bulwark and The Last Ace, who not only have aggressive jockeys on board, but have been effective going to the lead. And The Last Ace, of course, is a John Morrison trainee that I was mentioning earlier, a son of A.C. Ducey, homebred by the Stonebridge Farm, who showed on debut that he could be almost anything. And with improvement off of that, he can certainly be a major contender. I thought this thing was as wide open as could be. I reluctantly picked Financial Stability, who I was hoping would be better getting back to a dry track. I thought that he was disadvantaged by being stuck behind a slow pace last time, and it just looked to me like a situation where he'd sit back and make one run. But I have very little confidence and would end up probably using quite a few. I actually think Gary Siaka's Microscope has a chance in here as well, and I think the slight cutback in distance will help. He's got to improve a little bit figure-wise, but this is a horse that has that sort of perfect one-run off the pace style for how this thing should unfold, because it's I think should burn early.
I'm glad to hear. Yeah, glad to hear you like Microscope, and they've had a lot of fun with him. Chowda, who beat him, stablemate, who beat him, is actually on the shelf, unfortunately, for a little bit. But Microscope has ended up being, they weren't sure what they were getting when they took the horse from Pletcher with that maiden win, but came right back, won that open company starter, and Gary, I remember calling Gary the next morning. How's that horse look? He said, you know what? He looks all right. I think he's going to be okay. So that's nice. And then the 11th, maiden special going the dog leg mile.
And this is a good race, I think, for bettors, in the sense that it does look like the principles are pretty tough, and one of them should win. And a lot of weary horse players, I think, are going to kind of hone in on Lonesome Fugitive, who was 8-5 in his debut, was very green, looked like he needed a race. Now it's been probably a lot longer than Chad Brown expected to get him back to the races, but he's a horse that obviously has a ton of pedigree, being out to Take the Ribbon, a homebred for the Gunthers, and I don't think he's going to have to improve a whole heck of a lot off his debut, given the general improvement first start to second start. Voodoo Zip and Turn of Events look like the alternatives. Voodoo Zip might be a little bit more dangerous because of his early speed and the strength of the Danny Gargan barn. You know, outside of that, you're looking at horses that are going to have to run. Maybe other than Red Storm Risen, who I think deserves some consideration. Obviously, Graham Motion's so good off the layoff. This dam was turf stakes placed, a Samson homebred, and she dropped a couple of turf winners. I don't see much. So I think it ends up being a race that Lonesome Fugitive wins almost by default, and I promise I'm not just picking Chad Brown horses because there's no alternative. It does look like a lot of them are very well positioned tomorrow, and this is another one of them.
Well, Chad's got four in the Ford Marcy and the two in the Westchester, the four in the Intercontinental, Network Effect in the Carter, the Financial Stability in that allowance, 10th, and then the options in here. And that's just from the sixth on. I didn't even write down the ones for earlier on the card. And he's also got one in it. Who's he got at Churchill? He's got a stake horse, runner, I think, at Churchill, too, tomorrow.
Well, you had Guarana yesterday, who certainly is going to be in the stake pretty soon.
Absolutely. She was good. 96 buyer for her on the comebacker. Nick, I appreciate it. Nick's analysis of the Saturday card will be up later tonight, probably in the early evening. It was up in the early morning hours this morning, in the 3 a.m. range, Nick. Honest Mischief, Gus Alonso, thank you, buddy. Honest Mischief running in the Aristides.
Aristides, exactly, tomorrow. Right.
Yes. Good job, Gus. And Gus's analysis available at BrisNet tomorrow for the Churchill card. But Nick's action and analysis up at the website, brought to you by Roberts Television Network, RTN. And Nick, good luck. We'll catch up next week.
Sounds great, Steve. Thanks. Good luck.
Nick Tamaro and Tam and TAMM1215. Make sure you're following on Twitter. And the next voice you hear is that of Rick Hammerly, standing by. Hammer.
What's going on? How you doing, Steve? Nice and quiet out here in California. Not much going on.
You had some rain. Brad said you got rain. Surprise rain.
I was saying that facetiously. I mean,
yes.
you're afraid to turn the TV on every morning to see what is going on. But things have calmed down a little bit, so we're okay. But it did rain. I thought, you know, I got a little sprinkles, and sometimes I forget what days of the week the sprinklers are set out in the yard when I get up, and I did notice a little extra wet on the pavement. So I guess we did get a little rain last night. So that's good for now. Good hiking weather keeps it low, but it was warm. Boy, earlier in the week we got hit with a heat wave. It's a little early for that, but we'll take it. It's all good. So, like I said, things have calmed down. I mean, in the real world out there, and so it's a good excuse to stay in for a while and do some handicapping. It's great to have New York back, of course. Now it's not funner, but we'll take it. I got to give you one thing. Last night, I watched a killer gambler movie that out of the blue. Now maybe I'm behind the times and didn't see it, but I put this movie on at like 11:30, and one of those ones I couldn't stop. But it's a great movie for gamblers, which is horse players. It's called 7 Days to Vegas, and I don't know if you've seen it or it's one of those everybody's seen and I'm the last one. But I just plucked it out. It was made last year. 7 Days to Vegas. If you're a horse player or a gambler in general, it is great. It's on Amazon Prime. So take an hour and a half and watch this movie, and you will love it. So anyway, I came out of the blue last night. I go, wow, where'd this movie come from? So 7 Days to Vegas. Yeah. So
I love
it. Never heard of it. If you've never heard of it, too, it's just about gambling, and it might not be at the level we have, but you've been there, at some point doing some of this crazy stuff, maybe not exactly, but you'll get it. And like I said, what is this thing? Don't read about it. Just turn it on, and I'll tell you what, in about 20 minutes, you'll be going, okay, what's going on here? But 7 days to Vegas. Good stuff, good stuff. You know, I wanted to make a quick comment about your one of the guests you had yesterday, that's Tyler Hoffman, young player and you know, fan enthusiast. And it's kind of neat to hear some young, enthusiastic people out there that are, you know, into the game and have, they have friends that are into the game you know, they're going to take our place as doing stuff and here and there. And he's got that new website where they do a lot of things on the trip notes. I didn't get the site, but I sent him a little message yesterday that thought it was great to hear him, and I'm glad that you have him on. I don't know where you plucked him out of, but it was a good get, and a very, very interesting to listen to, and like I said, enthusiastic. I mean, I'm sure he was good to talk to.
He was a lot of fun. And by the way, I really appreciate, I just got an email and I'm going to discuss it quickly online, on the air. The Casey will appreciate this. Our friend, Bob Lotti, who I do hear from, you know, pretty regularly. Bob, Casey, had his computer, his recording computer. He uses about three different, computers to do the show. As we got off the air yesterday, he had an electronic surge in the studio, and it ruined the recording computer. So he was waiting for Sirius to send the files back to post yesterday's show. So those that want to hear Tyler and everything else from yesterday, that's why it's not posted yet. And Casey, Bob just wrote to me, and I'm writing back. He records the show himself, and so he's got MP3 of yesterday. And so he said, do you guys want the copy? And I guess he has sort of anticipated what was happening. And so thanks to Bob. And so, Casey, I'm giving him the address, and if he gets it to you before Sirius does, we'll get that posted later today. We got the best audience. We got the absolute best audience going. I've got to tell you.
Well, of course. There's no doubt about it. It has been. You got backup. You got whatever you need. You got it. Great.
Unbelievable.
Huh?
Pretty funny. Pretty funny.
It is pretty funny. And I say I've been listening to Nick go over the New York cards. I Dell was in both of them, and Wednesday was, like you said, semi-form full, and it was good. I played a couple contests and then was well, and then did the work for yesterday. And I remember saying to myself, I'm not playing anybody today with this wacky card. And it was wacky. I ended up doing a show thing and got knocked. I knew it wasn't going to last long. I was in the final five out of about 900 and got nailed in the sixth race with, I took the Siaka horse instead of Brad Cox horse and got nailed at the end. But that was, the end of the day turned out to be bizarro, but, you know, it's great. It's what you get with the big fields. It just had the feel. It seemed like every race was a New York bred race, and those are the ones that you know, you go, uh-oh, anything can happen. And I know our friend Jimmy was playing and had a pretty good day yesterday because of it. So, so today I says, you know, I'm going to take the day off today. And then, of course, you got the big pick.
There's no taking days off.
Oh, no, but I had an appointment for, like, right in the middle of the day. I was looking for an excuse to take the day off, but now Jimmy calls last night, and he goes, oh, there's a carryover and a pick five. I said, no, please. So as soon as we get off here today, I'll be delving into that. But, you know, it's really, it kind of put the final, you know, the candle on the cake with New York coming back and coming back as strong as it has. And so some confusion on... Not for me, because as we talked about a couple weeks ago, we started pushing RTN even more so now with Churchill and Belmont not on TVG as an alternative for where to watch. And of course, you know, kind of found RTN a couple weeks ago when we talked a lot about it. And believe me, let me just tell you, it's like opening up the Christmas present every day. When you can just go out and flip on, and you have control over what track you're going to watch, and the feed is great, and the info is great, and it's the only way to watch this stuff. So I personally don't have to worry about where I'm going to find Belmont and what time and what channel, and same with Churchill, so I just go to RTN. So listen to Steve, go to the site, hit the button, get 5 free days, and guess what? Usually when I take those trials, you know, I'm free for a month, I write on a calendar, cancel this. You will not cancel this. You will just keep going. So $15 a month for that. But for the average fan that's listening, so yesterday I said, you know what? I'm going to go, first race started at Belmont. I'm going to go on regular TV, and I'm going to see if I can find it. I could not find it. So, and I got, you know, I have, you know, 200 channels, 300 channels. I don't know how many channels I have, and I'm probably just like everybody else. Where exactly, because I know it skips about. I've heard a soccer game jumped in the middle the other day, too. So do you know exactly if what the schedule is, if, you know, people just want to turn on and watch Belmont, where they go? And it's just helpful for me because I get asked, too.
Well, first of all, the list, and I'll put the link up on Twitter. But if you go to the NYRA website, and you'll see it right, you'll see it. Dave Grenick touching base, NYRA.com, and the TV schedule is there for you. And I'm going to give you the direct link, and it changes. You know, about every week they. You know, start to have a scroll, like right now, for instance. Actually, right now they've expanded it. They've got every single broadcast day listed already through July 12th. That's actually since the last time I looked. So, for instance, today, Fox Sports 2, 1 o'clock to 2:20, and then 4:30 to 6:30, MSG Plus. All day, the whole show, 1 to 6:30. And the Fox regionals are 2 to 6. And it changes slightly, you know, the half an hour here, a half an hour there. But MSG virtually nonstop, MSG Plus nonstop. And Fox Sports 1 and 2, you know, Fox Sports 1 particularly on the weekends. And if you just go to NYRA.com, you know, it automatically takes you to the Belmont section, and if you scroll down the side, you'll see the television TV schedule, fourth from the bottom of the long scroll that starts with Across the Board podcast, Belmont Showdown, Bet Now, etc. Go scroll down, and there's TV schedule, and it's all right there for you. But MSG Plus, and also, I'll, you know, for those of you that are NYRA bets that are in markets with NYRA bets, 29 jurisdictions. You can watch off the NYRA website, and even if you're not, you know, betting much or betting at all, as long as you've registered for an account, you can watch the TV show. And there's several choices, actually. There's a whole, right off the NYRA website, not even on the NYRA Bets platform. And if you download the NYRA, you know, the NYRA app, it's right there. And you've got different camera angles. You got the different feeds, essentially, that are the trucker is seeing. So several options on this front.
Good. And then I just wanted everyone to know where to go, and I did. And I just went to the site, and actually the TV schedule, they actually did it right. It's right on the front page because, you know, the worst thing you do is just go three deep and try to find it. It's right there, so that's good. And, you know, obviously we can watch it on our computers. I don't know about you, but if I can watch it on a TV, I'd, you know, 10 times rather watch it on a TV than a computer. But we've all watched it on a computer and a phone down driving down the road and all that, so we know about that stuff. But in the comfort of your home, if you can get it on the, you know, big screen and have HD, it's all the better. So, good. I'm glad they have that. And, you know, it's a shame that we're not all, you know, Not everybody gets all those channels, but if you want to watch, you can. So that's good, and a good you know, 3 or 4 days to get started. And there's no reason why they won't continue. It's good to see some familiar names back in the riders and everything else. So I actually did sign up for NYRA Bet the other day. I said, give me that. They got that $200 offer.
5%
this week.
Yep.
So I said, you know what?
5%.
I'm starting fresh with a new deal. So I didn't know. I actually didn't realize that was you could do that in California. So, but you can. So I'm in there.
Nice.
Which is good. And one more little news thing before we go on. Kentucky Downs news, some news out there. Tie into New York. Larry Colmus, who was the announcer for the Triple Crown on NBC, and obviously was a former NIRA announcer and other places as well. Good friend of mine, but he signed on to be an additional announcer at Kentucky Downs, which is going to be kind of crazy. So we got a 6-day meet, and two of the best announcers in the game gonna share the booth. So kind of interesting, and that alone tells you what kind of meet that is. It's a fun meet. It's a fan meet, and a lot of stuff going on. 6 days this year. In September, and instead of kind of being out there by ourselves, we got a thing called the Kentucky Derby going to run a couple days before the meets opens. But it opens on September 7th and goes through the 16th with 6 days planted in between there. So that'll be kind of cool to have Larry. And actually, I think they're going to share the mic one day and just do whatever they do whatever they want to do, whether they're going to call half a race each or split the card, and then they'll each take up a few days for the rest of the meet coming up. So that'll be interesting. And one more thing I know that's going on there is, don't know the particulars yet, but there's going to be a very interesting, different type of contest, handicapping contest, taking place the entire meet there, kind of working with the NTRA, and there'll be some things involved, but it's going to be rather unique. You can do some fun things with the 6-day meet that you can't do with other stuff. So I know we're a few months off, but getting ready for then, and obviously, like everywhere else in the world, hoping to have fans in attendance there, because it just adds to the atmosphere. It's 3 months off, and hopefully the things have settled down enough out there that where we can have sports with some people watching. So anyway, wanted to touch base on that, and so racing wise out here in California, Santa Anita was back on track last week. Ran three good days, or I think it was 4 days. Did we do 4 days last? They did 4 days last week, and going to go back to the 3-day schedule: Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and move on. Del Mar has announced their intent to come back and run 3 days a week as well, a week early. So. Kind of getting back on the track here in California, of course, with a lot of other things going on locally. Every time you turn on the news, I turn on the news this morning, there's some Amazon warehouse, which is like a 3-city block, is on fire somewhere. There's always something going on. So racing kind of is getting a little bit lost in the mix, but hopefully after this weekend, it won't. But today's the start of the second week, and then tomorrow is Santa Anita Derby Day, and they stacked the day with six or seven stakes, and the day came off. I'm sure they're disappointed in the numbers. Some smallish fields in the stakes. Only got one shipper, I think, for the day, Kenny McPeak. Right? I don't think I saw anybody else ship in. Which is, now that everybody's back in the lineup, there's no real reason to ship if you have like races. So back, they got the seven stakes done, and pulling one of those big days off, pulling it off is not as easy as it sounds. Either you just Steve Askerson has tenfold in, but we got him in. So if you want to talk about those, wherever else you want to go, whatever you want to do,
you're called. Your call, Rick. Whatever whichever races caught your eye. Whatever.
It really won't take a whole lot to go through these. And I took the form down early before they had the odds and numbers and all that to look at them. And I kind of did it preliminary, and then go back and redo it. And I tell you, it seems like every race I landed on, I looked at the jockey, and it was Flavien Prat. It was not intentional, but he gets a lot of the prime mounts, some of the turf races here. So, I mean, the first race is the Franz Valentine. It's a cowbred race for fillies. You got three horses coming off extended layoffs. one of them that's run this meet and the others that, you know, off normally. I you know, Richard Baltus, you usually start there with some, most of the turf stakes here. He's got Super Patriot in here. He's got some recency, and he's back with his own kind. He's been running an open company, ran a second in a graded race, and comes out of a grade two. He'll be very happy to get back with him, with Calpress, and I like him, and you know, that's the way that goes. The Desert Code, it's kind of, you know, every time I look at one of these races, these three-year-old races, and I see 5.5 furlongs, I just cringe. I sure hope that the hill is at least a consideration to come back. And I haven't obviously been out there in a while. I haven't seen any photos. I don't think they've tilled it up and planted soybeans up there yet. I mean, I think it's still in condition where they could race on it if they wanted to. So hopefully, when everything dies down, they come back in the fall. We're running down the hill, but these races at 5 furlongs and 5.5 at Keeneland or Belmont, they're fine. They just fit natural. But 5.5 just doesn't do anything for me out here in Santa Anita. Just a blah race. So anyway, that's enough of that. But once again, I come down to looking for some horse with some speed in here, and now there's a few of them a little bit, but she's so special. Peter Miller, I don't know, in the last 4, 5, 6 years, he's just zeroed in on these 5.5 races, and he's got a filly here running against the boys, and she did so successfully last time, and, you know, Pratt's aboard there. This is a rookie mistake from Doug O'Neill. This is a kite. This is the type of race that Doug wins, and I've mentioned it before. Doug wins a lot of races just because he's in them. And it sounds kind of odd, but he likes to run. And his horses are ready to run. He puts them in races. And he kind of looking at them, and they kind of fit, they don't. And they're ready to run, and they win. And this is one of those races that fits him for rookie mistakes. So keep an eye on him. Let's see. We got the Fenny to Oaks next. And, you know, we all saw Kenny McPeak. We saw him in Gulfstream, and a nice price there. I think we talked about him there, and then he comes back in the fantasy at an even bigger price, and you know, not illogical at all going in there. But all the Venetian Harbor was one of the big ones in there, and anyway, she smoked him. Actually, surprised to see him out here for the 400,000, excuse me, for the 200,000 Grade Two. I think this is the first time Santa Anita Oaks has been run as a grade two, and we've talked about this before. Once you go from a grade one to a grade two, if you don't immediately, you know, get that race full of grade one winners and full of it just goes down. Very rarely can you fight back and get that grade one back. It has to start that next year with a good running, and then maybe subsequent good running to get a shot to go back. But it's amazing, and there's, you know, some of the local horses have probably decided to go elsewhere and go for the grade one and bigger money. But 5-horse field, I tried to turn off Brad Free this morning, not to turn him off, but so I hate listening to what Brad, and sometimes you have Jay on before. I don't want to hear them, so if I say the same thing, it's not on purpose. But he mentioned Speech. I heard him talking about Speech a little bit. I'm very anxious to see Speech come back at running second. That was a loaded race there at Oaklawn. She got beaten next. I mean, Swiss Skydiver's the horse to beat. And sometimes those horses, when they're supposed to win and they're favored, they don't run back to it. You got a trip involved. You got all kinds of things involved. So if you're going to take a shot in here, Speech is a little battle tested. And Mike, Whitey, I guess you're okay to call him Whitey. I heard that on Jonathan Kinchin's interview, so I'm going to call him Whitey again. Speech is one of the ones that, I mean, if you're going to take a shot, I mean, this is the time to do it. I mean, there's a Baffert horse in there that broke his maiden by 10 at Oaklawn in the Slop. I don't know. I guess you could go that way, but I think Speech is very interesting. What do we got next? The Crystal Water. Interesting batch here. Once again, State Bred's going the old mile on the turf. I was looking at Prince Earl. from Phil D'Amato, who does very well in these kinds. And once again, this is a horse that's been running very competitively in graded, open graded races. Actually won a grade two at Del Mar last year, coming off a little bit of a layoff. I like Prince Earl in there, along with Warden Jerry from Mike Pipey, another one that's won open. And some of the cowbreds could run a little bit this year. There's just not enough of them. Then we come to the Derby, the Santa Anita Derby, and looking at this thing, we're in June, and I know we haven't run in a while, but you know, when you've got the top contenders, I mean, look at Authentic, 3 starts, Honor AP, 3 starts, Azul Coast, 3 starts. It's crazy, isn't it? We just don't run them as much as we used to. There's even a maiden in here. I can't think of the last time I've seen a maiden in a Santa Anita Derby. But let's move on. And I'm going to take a stand against some of the top two just because you can. They've been off for a little bit, and obviously Authentic looks like the horse to beat. Going to go out there. He hasn't really wowed me at all. I mean, he's won some races. I think he's beaten a total of 12 horses, something like that, 5, 5, 6, 16 horses in 3 races. Not the greatest horses behind him. So a couple horses to look at. Shooter Shoot ran a good race there at Oaklawn once again. Pretty decent field there in that one set that ended. Didn't he get scratched out of the Arkansas Derby I think he got scratched out of there. So the intent was to run him there.
Yep.
And it is intriguing. And then I'm going to go back to a horse, I don't know how to pronounce it, Blaine Rice horse, the horse that runs second in the Breeders' Cup. Now, this is a do or die for him. He broke his mane in the Golden Gate Fields, comes back in a weak juvenile. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Gets beat ahead, follows that up with a nice second in the Los Alamitos Futurity. Turns out that race was kind of a dud as well. Gives him some time off, comes back in the Risen Star, is favored at even money in one of the divisions there. Just runs a clunker, and kind of tossed this horse at the time. It comes back in half of the Open Arkansas Derby. You know, it runs an improved race. It's not terrible. Shows a little bit more speed, and nobody was going to catch Charlton that day, loose on the lead. I'm willing to give this horse one more time. I like the jockey switch to Victor. It's do or die for this horse right now. I mean, if he doesn't win here, you'll see him at a one-sided end, in a few weeks down the road at Golden Gate. But I'm willing to give this horse another try in this type of race just because it's there. It's a small field. Maybe he can show something. But anyway, I'm not, jumping up and down about the horses in the Santa Anita Derby, but we'll see what we get. The Cinema, 3-year-olds on the turf. Once again, there's a couple in there. Jeff Mullins has a horse on the outside, Haribo, which is not written by Slavian Pratt, which I like a little bit. And there's a horse in there, broke his maiden for 20 for Simon Callahan. You don't see that too often, but you know what? Short field, if they're on a roll, you throw them in there. The Hollywood Gold Cup, which is very cool. I'm glad they brought back the name Hollywood. When we had to rename or redo all those races, we were told to get the name Hollywood out of there, so we did, and came up with that goofy name, the Gold Cup at Santa Anita. Just never really clicked, so Hollywood Gold Cup is back. Once again, 6 horses in there. You got Improbable, who's going to be favored once again. He likes to eat up a little bit of money. And maybe this Mile and a Quarter thing will settle him down and he can go. He's a very talented horse, obviously. He's almost won $1 million. And, a whole lot. Mid-court, I guess, runs very well. Victor's back on the mound. I guess he's the one to take a look at. Higher power through in a clunker last time. Actually, the last couple of times, he hasn't run great. He'll be there with Pratt. But I think Mid-court is the one to upset Improbable. Improbable's going to, I think he's a better horse than we think, and they scratched him out of the race at the Oakland Handicap because he was on the outside again. But he'll be tough, and Tenfold comes in. I'm not sure. There's plenty to run at here. Maybe he'll be all right, but I'll take a look at Mid-court in there. And, some small fields, but there's some good alternatives, as Nick went over the New York card. to go. Churchill has a good card, and you know what? If you have the time and you're off, and delve into them and enjoy racing because we're back.
Absolutely. Well, Rick, big weekend, not just there, really everywhere. And with Woodbine opening, we straddled the border, and we had already, you know, we'd already gotten some action in Western Canada as well, Assiniboia. And we're getting close. Things are going great. Good luck this weekend, and enjoy, and we'll talk next week.
Thanks, Steve. Stay safe, and we will talk next week. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Rick Hammerly, folks. We better stay here, Case. We better get to Jay Privman. We're about 10 minutes behind because we still have to get, speaking of Woodbine, to Ron Gierkink and to Dave Grenig. So there will not be a break. And no rush, Case. Jay's expecting the call. I don't think... I'm just trying to remember. And by the way, since we're vamping for a minute here quickly till we're joined by Jay, yesterday was actually the anniversary of the show for me and Kay. And it was, you know, the show's 15 years old, and with me in this chair, 13 years yesterday, June 4th. This is actually the one benefit that Facebook seems to have is providing certain memories. You don't want to be reminded, you know, when your cat or dog died. But otherwise, that was a nice note that I got last night. I noticed that as I was doing something. Want to make a note too, as Jay joins us, a reminder about the free NHC qualifier, NTRA, horseplayers.com, and 3 seats tomorrow. And they'll, by about 5 o'clock today, they'll have the races posted. Jay Privman, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Excellent. I'm waiting for Casey's answer. I don't think we've ever done the show without a break, ever. So we've broken new ground here today.
It's an exciting thing to be a part of.
I can feel it through the phone.
No, I mean it's. I almost feel like I'm, you know, Buzz Aldrin to your Neil Armstrong today. I mean, it's an incredible moment.
That's great. Jay, one thing that I haven't had a chance to do, we talked Arrogate this week, and from a couple perspectives, but I haven't. I've been waiting for your visit to fold in Pleasantly Perfect, who, you know, seems to be one of those horses that doesn't get brought up enough with his accomplishments, but the two classic winners that we lost this week. I was anxious for your thoughts. You saw them both up close.
Yeah, I mean, completely different kinds of careers. You know, in that Arrogate was, you know, briefer and bolder. Pleasantly Perfect was around a lot longer. But, you know, Pleasantly Perfect was an interesting story. He was very ill as a young horse, and they didn't even know that he'd make it to the races, let alone, you know, accomplish what he did. And there's, you know, there's some commonality with this horse, as you mentioned, you know, Breeders' Cup Classic, but, you know, they both won the Dubai World Cup, too.
That's
so
right.
they've got that in common as well. And, you know, Pleasantly Perfect was a top older horse for a number of years. He won the Goodwood, which is, you know, been renamed the Awesome again. He won that a couple of times. Breeders' Cup Classic, as we mentioned, the Dubai World Cup and the Pacific Classic as well. So he was a top older horse for, you know, for a number of years. And, you know, the news was reported this week that he had passed away in Turkey, where he had gone to, you know, he was exported there a while ago for stud duty.
Well, some Arrogate reflection.
He was just an incredibly brilliant horse for, you know, there was a point where, I mean, it was probably no better horse in the world for about 8 months or so from the time he won the Travers through the Breeders' Cup Classic, the inaugural Pegasus, and then his crazy win in the Dubai World Cup. And then, you know, he just wasn't the same after that, whether it was because he went to Dubai and didn't freak that day or more, he just never was the same at Del Mar. It just seemed to be his kryptonite, that track. And I know he won there in his prep before he went to the Travers, but, you know, it was just a tune-up against literally two other horses. It was a three-horse field that day. But that stretch was as good a stretch of races as I think you'll ever see in terms of, you know, quality and, you know, four different racetracks, right? Saratoga, Santa Anita, Gulfstream, and Maidan, and just incredible performances in those races. Again, Breeders' Cup, when he ran down California Chrome wasn't stopping. He just ran him down. And both those horses, I remember that week, both trained lights out coming into the race. I mean, Arrogate's final couple of works leading up to the Breeders' Cup were crazy good. So that was a heck of a race between those two. So it was he was a hell of a racehorse. It's really unfortunate that he's only going to end up having, what, three crops? This was his third year at stud.
Exactly. And we'll talk next week to Garrett O'Rourke and get Garrett's reflections. I hate when I have to ask him. And usually it's older, horses, lives coming to a close. So this was sad. And you know, one thing, Jay, that the pleasantly perfect passing invoked, the news of it, thinking back to Mandela's accomplishment, and I just remember, I can't remember where I watched it and where we were betting, my buddy Phil and I, and it just was more and more remarkable, you know, as it went on, you know, for him to win the four, I mean, the one dead heat, but it was, I don't think people realize if you weren't alive and a racing, you know, horse player or racing fan at the time, I don't think people can imagine how big a deal that was when it happened.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy to win four races on one card like he did that day. As you mentioned, one of them was a dead heat. I mean, I remember that week really well. It was brutally hot out here at Santa Anita that week. There was even a fire in the hills earlier in the week. It was just really uncomfortable kind of conditions. But his horses just showed up and fired that day. And even there were a couple races where he had a couple of runners, and they even had, you know, good supporting performances in those races, like in the juvenile. So it was a great single day achievement. One of the, I'm sure, best training feats I can recall in all the years I've done this. It ranks up there with the day, I don't remember how many years ago it was now, when, you know, McGahee kind of ran the table on, was a Jockey Club Gold Cup day, when he just won just about every stake on the card that day, about 20 years ago. In terms of the Breeders' Cup, that's got to be the best single day training performance ever.
And I'm sure he somehow found a way to self-deprecate about it.
He always does.
Unbelievable. Exactly right. Well, I appreciate it, Jay, because you had, you know, you obviously had unique, you know, perspective with, you know, watching the two of them and their careers, you know, different as they were. Let's turn our attention to what lies ahead. And of course, I didn't really even get a chance earlier with Marty. We dove into Churchill action, so we didn't get much Derby watch. But let's shift gears to the 3-year-old scene.
Well, in terms of Derby watch, obviously the biggest switch we had to make from week to week was right at the top, because Nadal was favored on Marty's line. Just as a reminder, the way we do it is we pick our 20 horses, and then Marty sets the odds as though that's the 20-horse field for the Derby. So, you know, when the favorite goes out, you're going to have a number of horses whose prices fall. And we brought in, or brought back, I guess I should say, Shooter Shoot, who'd kind of been, he was on the list earlier. We dropped him after he got scratched from the division of the Arkansas Derby, just because we had other horses we liked better. But in light of Nadal's defection and Shooter Shoot being in action Saturday at Santa Anita in the Derby, we decided to put him in to round out to replace Nadal in terms of that spot. But from an odd standpoint, Tis the Law is now favored anew. He had been previously, and obviously the odds on other well-regarded horses like Maxfield and Charlatan and Honor AP tumbled on Marty's line as well, but that was obviously the most significant change we've had to make, not only this past week, but really on the Derby trail this year.
And we get to the doorstep of the delayed, but thank goodness it's being run, Santa Anita Derby.
Right. 2 months after it was supposed to be run, but instead of being 1 month in front of the Kentucky Derby, it's 3 months in front of the Kentucky Derby. So just sort of add all that to, you know, what else, as I wrote in my previous story, add that and more to what else is new for 2020. You know, looking forward to this race, obviously, because of the big two in the race, Authentic and Honor AP, who were 1-2 in the San Felipe. And even that first match between those two was delayed because they were supposed to run against each other in the Sham. And Honor AP had a foot bruise that week and ended up not running, and his three-year-old debut was delayed until the San Felipe. So Authentic won the Sham in a romp against five overmatched horses and then came back and beat Honor AP in the San Felipe, which really set them up well for what you wanted to see in terms of the rematch 4 weeks away. Now it's been delayed. It ended up being 3 months. So they're kind of both hitting the reset button in a way. This is the biggest gap Authentic's had since his debut. I mean, he ran back in 2 months and 2 months. This time it's three. And Honor AP obviously ended up, because of missing the Sham, he had a longer delay. It was about 4.5, nearly 5 months until from his maiden win until the San Felipe. I think a lot of both these colts, as you know, I've been really high on Honor AP. Back when he broke his maiden, written about him extensively, and I just think the farther the better for him. But per usual, if you know, in a match race, the horse who's got the speed has the edge in here, and Authentic is going to have the edge in that regard. The only horse who really looks like he might, you know, be able to go with him, you know, there's some other speed in here, but maybe Shoot or Shoot from the inside. But I don't. You know, you're kind of damned if you do and damned if you don't with Shoot or Shoot. If you try and go with Authentic early, I don't know that you're going to be around at the end. But if you leave Authentic loose on the lead, you've got to hope he can't stay the trip. So there's there'll be an interesting tactical race, I think, for Shoot or Shoot. And Honor AP, he doesn't drop out of it. I think he'll lay close enough. I don't know if he can beat Authentic the way the race may come up tomorrow, but I still think very, very highly of him, and I really like his chances as we head out to a mile and a quarter and the Derby down the line.
Well, and, you know, even though it is still the Santa Anita Derby, it's still a, you know, grade one, the import is obvious, but John Sheriffs is John Sheriffs. He's got the long-term goal that is still, you know, the shining city on the hill. I mean, it, you know, given where we are and where we have to go yet, I imagine that it'd be lovely to win, but not an issue given, you know, where they want to get.
True, but I think, you know, like you were initially alluding to, the fact that it's a grade one does make it important.
Sure.
You know, for both these horses, because they're both colts, and that certainly is going to enhance their residual value. So I'm sure they're both in it to win it tomorrow.
Well, and of course, a part of the Authentic story includes the acquisition, the breeding right acquisition by Spendthrift this week, and Spendthrift's name added to the ownership line for Saturday. And Jay, beyond the Derby, you looked at the other Grade One and a couple of the other major events, the Oaks and the Cinema. How about some further thoughts on the card?
So, yeah, I mean, the Oaks, unfortunately, has a really small field. You know, it would have been nice to see some of the leading lights out here, you know, do well enough to, you know, to have a bigger field. But there's just been a number of horses, you know, like who are just not ready right now, that were among the leaders of the division earlier in the year out here. But so I think it was really clever of Kenny McPeak to bring Swiss Skydiver in here. You know, the Kentucky Oaks is still 3 months away, and he's got a sharp filly who's coming off wins Gulfstream and Oaklawn. So it's like, why not? I think it was a pretty smart move. You know, I thought Speech ran a really big race in her last start at Oaklawn, and you know, McCarthy's got decent chances in both these races with Speech, and you know, Rushy's not as good, I don't think, right now as Honor AP and Authentic, but he certainly deserves a shot in that Santa Anita Derby, and I think on paper he's got a really good shot to finish in the money. And then in the going back to the Oaks, you've got Regal Beauty, who won a maiden race for Baffert a few weeks ago, and then Merneith, who was extremely highly regarded before she ever ran, and really just kind of disappointed in her first two races, and then ran off the screen last time at Oaklawn when she caught a sloppy track. So the question is she, you know, better now, or is she? There's still a question about her staying the trip. I thought she had a really easy trip in her second start when she went a mile, and she still got nailed in that race. So she's an interesting horse because I know she was really, really well regarded before she ever ran, and she underperformed her first two races, but maybe now she's figured it out. So she's, I think of the, it's an interesting race in terms of who could win. It's not an appealing race from a gambling standpoint with just four runners now.
You know, I said the same thing to Brad in hour one today, Jay, that, you know, she's funny that way, that you know, the people are going to have this sort of sour impression from, you know, the early two starts when she got corralled, but it might be that, you know, we're further down the road here now. I mean, it's June, whether it's maturity issues or whatever else. I'm with you. I think that she's intriguing in here, so I'm glad to hear you say that. How about Hollywood?
Don't put words in my mouth. I mean, I said I think she, you know, she could be better, but she also might not be able to stay the trip too. Her one route race was very disappointing.
That's fair.
When you look at the pace.
That's
so
fair.
You know.
Yeah.
Let's don't. Yeah.
I hear you. How about in the Gold Cup? And I. Kind of delighted that it'll be the Hollywood Gold Cup from here on out.
Yeah, that was a nice thing that Santa Anita did. It's a race that, you know, it's got so much history, and you know, unfortunately, with the demise of Hollywood Park, it's just nice to see it acknowledged. It's, you know, it's unfortunate that the older horses, there's just, you know, so few of them ready to go in this race right now. You've got a number of them tied up in the same barn, and a lot of them were overseas, and that just sort of depletes the availability of horses here. You know, I'm a big fan of Higher Powers. I know he had excuses for the race at Gulfstream. He just wasn't right that week, and I thought, you know, obviously his Pacific Classic was terrific. He had legitimate excuses in the Awesome again, where he just didn't break from the inside and lost his position, and his Breeders' Cup Classic was a good race. He was well beaten by both Vino Rosso and McKenzie, but he ran well in his own right. It was a good, solid race, and certainly if he runs back to that race, he's good enough to, that I think will take this down. You know, Mid-Court, he disappointed last time, I thought, when he tried to go a mile and a quarter in the Santa Anita handicap. But he's a better horse than that, and I expect him to run a better race than that. I don't know that Improbable can stay a mile and a quarter, so that's the question with him. And I've always thought, Tenfold's a neat horse, and that he travels and he picks up checks. I just don't think he's quite this good. So for me, I think Higher Power wins the race if he runs back to his best. But if for some reason he's not there, and what we saw last time was a preview of Coming Attractions, I just think Midcourt's the best horse in here. And Midcourt, I think he's a really high quality horse, even despite the disappointing in the big cap last time.
And you've had an affection for him, actually, right? I mean I when I saw that he was in here, I kind of was happy to, the blinkers coming off. I was intrigued. It's a six pack, but it's a nice group.
It's a good group. It's not a grade one kind of group, except for maybe a couple of these. But it's it'd just be nice to see a bigger field for a race of this quality.
Sure.
But I'm like I said, when you've got Mucho Gusto, McKenzie, who's running on Sunday, now Maximum Security, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, all looking for different spots. This is one of the things that happens when you've got a lot of horses in the same barn. And a lot of horses that were overseas. Obviously, McKenzie's not ready to go a mile and a quarter quite yet. I would think the Triple Bend would be a tune-up for the Met Mile, which he almost won last year and might have been best in with the trip he had. And some of the others just aren't ready yet. Maximum Security and Mucho Gusto. So, and unfortunately, the depth of horses here, and it's not just Baffert has got a lot of horses tied up. Sadler's got a lot of older horses, and the only one who's really ready right now is Higher Power. He's got other horses who could have potentially been here, but they're either not training well or just not, they're from the same connections, and this is the one that's going to go. So it'd be nice if some of the horses in this division were a little better dispersed.
Jay, other highlights on the card, the mile and an eighth Cinema for the three-year-olds, and this could be productive as that division tries to pull itself together. And speaking of three-year-olds, a very prominent, a very expensive three-year-old debuts in the sixth, maybe a Cezanne and Cinema thoughts?
So regarding the Cinema, it really looks like the race goes through Jeff Mullins' two horses with Caribou and KPL Systems Go. The question for Caribou will be the distance going out to a mile and an eighth. He's very much like River Boy in Part Two. He's not a big horse, and I think he's best at a mile where you get some pace to run into, and he might not get the same kind of pace going a mile and an eighth that I think he wants to run into going a mile, and that might make the stablemate a better gamble, especially if he might be a slightly better price, making his stakes, running against stakes horses here. But also the distance might be the difference there. And then, you referenced Fazan, who's obviously been a horse that's been well-watched since, as a two-year-old in training 15 months ago. He cost $3.65 million at auction. He's trained brilliantly for his first start. In fact, he was made a late nominee to the Triple Crown when those closed on Wednesday and were announced yesterday. He was one of the 22 three-year-olds, along with such names as Swiss Skydiver, who's running in the Santa Anita Oaks tomorrow, and others like Pneumatic and King Guillermo. But anyway, Cezanne is very highly regarded. Drew the rail, so he has to overcome that. And there's a stablemate in here that worked very well the other day. This is Brazen, who's also making his debut, also for Baffert. And if you watch the XBTV workout videos, he worked heads up with Charlatan the other day on Monday in his final work. He's not a bad horse at all. So he's got two pretty nice horses making their debuts there. And then you've got, you know, like Mystery Man for Mandela, who's got a couple in here. But, you know, Cezanne's obviously the horse who's the deserved focal point with a series of brilliant works and pedigree and auction buy all adding up to keen interest.
Very much. And that race goes at 6:03 Eastern, 3:03 Pacific. Cezanne on the rail with Flavian Pratt. The Santa Anita Derby / Hollywood Gold Cup card refashioned, and should be a fun afternoon, Jay. And from that point, I think our focus will start to turn toward the Belmont Stakes.
Yes, 2 weeks away. And to think in normal times, remember those, it would have been tomorrow.
Exactly. I punch things in the, when I get my travel lined up, I put, you know, all these different, you know, stake Saturdays into the my laptop calendar. And so this morning, typically at 6 a.m., you get the reminder of what, you know, what's upcoming, and it popped up and it said Belmont. And I was like, wow. This is so
screwy.
Yep, we'd
be coming to the end of the Triple Crown. Instead, it's 2 weeks away from commencing.
So, exactly right.
Add it to the list.
Well, exactly. Well, and lots of action in between, because all these between from Belmont to September, all the new, you know, point races and Derby Watch at the Daily Racing Form. Jay Privman, everybody, DRF Privman, Jay, enjoy the day, and we'll do some summary next week.
Very good, Bob Irving, George, Steve.
That's my fault for putting day and Jay in the same sentence.
It's all good.
America's Turf Authority, the Daily Racing Form, and we continue with Daily Racing Form guests, as we said from the top of the show, because standing by in Toronto, Ron Gierkink with the Woodbine Preview. Ron, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Excellent, excellent. How's everybody fared in TO through the pandemic issues?
Yeah, we're hanging in there. I mean, it's been... it's been tough, like it has been for everybody, and, you know, Toronto's densely populated, so there's been lots of cases here, but things are improving that way, and we're finally going to start racing after about 6 weeks of a delay to the start of the meet.
And one nice thing that happened was for Jim Lawson and the Woodbine team, they kind of focused on a target pretty far out, I thought, Ron. I mean, the fact that they said, right? It was a good 6-7 weeks ago they said that this is our target. And unlike a lot of other venues, that ended up coming to fruition.
Yeah, it certainly did. I think, you know, they've had a good relationship with government health officials. And I think they kind of knew if everything fell into place that this could be the right weekend. And it's come to fruition. It's... we've come up with two good 11-race cards to start the meet this weekend.
Talk a little bit about the horsemen and the situation that they dealt with. I mean, considering how many Woodbine-type outfits winter in Florida, whether at Summit Tampa and a lot at Gulfstream and in the training centers up the eastern coast of Florida, and then a few might end up in fairgrounds. Talk about, you know, them coming home and getting back and getting an opportunity to, you know, gear their horses up for, you know, the coming season.
Yeah, everybody who's come home since about mid-March, they had to, like, the borders closed to regular, only essential travel, of course, but Canadians can get across the border, but all trainers and, you know, people who work for them, they had to self-quarantine for 14 days when they got back here, so they just couldn't go back to their barn at the Woodbine and start training again. They, of course, the horses shipped right in and began training, but no, it was a difficult period for them, and they all had to get through it, and And it looks like we got about 1,400 horses on the backstretch. And, you know, we did have an outbreak of equine herpes virus back in May, and that was contained to one barn. And looks like we're past that. And the only problem there is those horses can't run for maybe a little while, but we still got full fields to start the meet.
Anybody that you know isn't able to be involved or new faces lay the landscape out, plus the refashioned stake schedule, how that's going to unfold, including plate day.
Yeah, so the Queen's Plate was postponed from late June to September 12th, and so that's part of a good card that will also include a few more stakes. And now a week later is the Woodbine Mile card, which is probably the second most important card of the meet. So those two cards are back to back. It's going to be a pretty busy time. And a month before the Queen's Plate will be the Woodbine Oaks and the Plate Trial. So they're two traditional. That's a big prep day for the Queen's Plate, and of course, fillies traditionally do well in the Queen's Plate. So Woodbine Oaks is a very important race. And going down to October 18th, now they put the Canadian International on hiatus for a year because of the international aspect of the race. But they have kept the E.P. Taylor. It's a grade one, still worth $600,000. So that's going to be a really good turf card along with the Neartic. And they shifted the grade one Northern Dancer over to that card, which was like a prep for the Canadian International. So that's October 18th. The jockey colony, the complexion of that has changed quite a bit this year with the retirement of Eurico da Silva. He was a perennial leading rider for quite a long time. So, I mean, he won 182 races last year, so... I think we're looking at maybe Rafael Hernandez and Kazushi Kimura maybe vying for leading rider. Kimura, of course, was a top apprentice in North America last year, Eclipse Award winning and Sovereign Award winning. And we got a couple new faces, interestingly. An English rider, Daryl Holland. He's got mounts here this weekend. He's 47, and he's here for the meet. I think he came in a few weeks ago and self-quarantined for 14 days and then started getting on horses. So, there's one more new rider, Larry Munoz. He's Venezuelan, but he's ridden all over the place, like in the Caribbean and Western Canada. And he's got some live mounts on the opening weekend, too. He's actually been getting on a lot of Bob Tiller horses for a while, and he was actually working Pink Lloyd early on when other jockeys weren't allowed on the backstretch because he was employed by Tiller. So those are the changes to the jockey colony, and we've got a lot of the regulars too, like Luis Contreras, Patrick Husbands, Emma Jane Wilson. They're all back. They should be, third, fourth, fifth, sixth in the standings. And really, that's I think the trainer colony. Trainers are going to be the same. I think Norm McKnight's sitting on a lot of wins to start the meet with his Oakland Shippers. And, of course, Cassie's going to win his fair share. He'll probably be, second in the standings again this year. Or maybe he can overtake Norm this year. And I think one good thing to know is that a lot of Maryland Shippers did really well here last year. Especially
Trombetta.
Trombetta, yep. Now, these Shippers this year, they can't ship in with their own people. They have to ship into a trainer that's here, and actually Trombetta has been doing that all along. He's been shipping horses to a certain trainer and been very successful doing it, and he's got a first-time starter out tomorrow that looks pretty good. So really, Maryland Shippers are worth really looking at this year, although it might be difficult for some if they don't have someone to ship into. And you look at someone like Chad Brown. He's always shipped into Roger Atfield's barn, so I don't think he'll have any problems, maybe sending up a few horses up here for our turf stakes. So that's kind of just the overview of the jockey and trainer colony.
Excellent. Excellent, Ron. Ron, give us a couple of plays from the weekend, opening day tomorrow. Anything that grabbed you?
Yeah, I did like that Trombetta first-time starter. I mean, without obviously in the works, but... my best bet was a horse called Circle of Friends. in the sixth. It's a second-level optional claimer, and he's debuting off the 62.5 claim by Donnie McRae back on November 24th, and he won first time out with a 94 buyer last year. So he runs good fresh, and he's working really good. He's 12-1 on the line. I don't think he'll be that high. That's a horse I like. I think in the seventh, it's a low-level claimer that I think Majestic Slough could wire the field for Mike DiPaolo. And Mike DiPaolo stayed a long time at Gulfstream this past winter due to the pandemic. And I think he's got a lot of live runners here, this weekend. And the feature tomorrow is really good. It's an open allowance with no conditions, going 7.5 on the inner turf. And Amalfi Coast, Kevin Attard horse who wintered at Gulfstream, I think she's won three stakes in a row all last fall, so she should be ready to run a big one, I think. She was a Sovereign Award finalist in three categories last year and didn't win one of them, so she was close, but she's pretty talented. And our friend Tommy Massis is going to have the favorite in the feature on Sunday, a second-level optional claimer, Foxy Bell, going for her third win in a row. She won twice at the same 62.5 optional claiming level last fall with the tag. So now he gets to run. She's running without the tag this Sunday because she's still eligible for the conditions of the race. So, I asked him to message me, and I said, give me something for my advance. And all he said was, she's doing really good. I hate number three. And I said, number three, he doesn't hate the post. He just hates the number. So, with number three, he says, I turn the TV down.
So, unbelievable.
She could evolve into a stakes horse this year. She can keep her momentum going from last year. She is Ontario sired, so it might have to be in that company. And he was kind of lamenting that there's not an Ontario sired sprint for fillies and mares till December. So I said, you're going to have to run against Pink Lloyd. And he said, not yet. So one at a time, I think this spot, looks like a good spot for her. All seven entrants are coming off a winter layoff, so they're all kind of in the same boat in terms of readiness. But she's been working in 59 and change, so it'll be fun to watch her on Sunday.
And you mentioned Pink Lloyd, and of course, just an amazing. How old now? Eight?
But he's eight, yeah. It looks like it's going to be his last year, and then he's going to be retired to the long run Durban Retirement Society here, and he's going to run in a couple, I think, 2 weeks. It will be the first stake for him. He was just nominated to that. We have our first stakes next Saturday, a pair of 6-furlong, 3-year-old stakes. So one for Colts and one for Phillies. And they've done a lot of that this year. They've paired up stakes, similar stakes like the Coronation Futurity and the Princess Elizabeth are on the same day, and the Gray Stakes and the Mazarine. So that's an interesting news.
Nice.
to the meeting, yes.
Well, Ron, it's always great to catch up with you. I appreciate it. And we'll check in as the Woodbine season gets rolling. And, of course, they started last week at Fort Erie. And, Fort Erie, actually, considering that they were victimized by that the herpes outbreak and that horses couldn't ship, they still had a hell of a day opening that opening card. They did okay.
They did almost that $2.1 million.
Unbelievable. Good for them.
Yeah, so they've carried over their draw from today, from yesterday to today. I think they had a little problem filling for two cards Monday, Tuesday, but they'll be able to put together something, and as the meet goes on, they'll feel better. But yeah, they've had a good start to the meet, so that was encouraging. It was only a race card of five horse fields.
Well, that's amazing to do that kind of business. Ron Gierkink of the Daily Racing Forum, thanks so much, and we'll talk soon.
Yeah, you're welcome, Steve.
Ron Gierkink, everybody, and Ron very much and his family big time in the game in Canada, including on the harness side. And we'll round out our just Daily Racing Forum weekend preview. I'm going to have to call it the DRF Weekend Preview because Marty McGee, Brad Free, Jay Privman, Ron Gierkink, and now Dave Grenig. Good morning.
Wow, I can't follow that group. That's A plus from start to finish there. Now you got me. Everybody's watching Governor Cuomo now.
Oh, is Cuomo on? What's he doing?
His daily, his daily schmooze. He's got his own radio show.
He hasn't taken over the city of New York yet. Has he moved into Gracie Mansion?
Yeah, I don't think he's welcome there.
He seemed to be threatening to take over the city the other day. Dave, I'll avoid asking you anything about Merrick. I promised myself I wouldn't bring up.
I'll just say this: I didn't get home until 9 o'clock last night. I could not navigate my town. I could not get. I did not get home until 9 o'clock. The streets were not open until 9 o'clock.
Unbelievable. And I just was prompted actually to ask you about the trip home. You know what the key to all this has been? Siaka is living in that town for what, 4 months, 5 months, and there's mayhem.
You turn the world upside down. Yeah. And now I can't even get to my own house. I should have went to his house. You know what? I wish I could have went to his house because I was actually on Merrick Avenue and I could have. I think I was able to go far enough where I could have actually gone down his street. I didn't think about that. I should have said, "Hey, Gary, can I come over?" Because I didn't eat. I hadn't eaten. So they had to do that.
Well, then you made a huge mistake not going over to Josephine and Gary's and. Gary, by the way, I can't wait to come down Belmont Week because Gary's already says, I found the best bagel joint. I found the best. he's got his food compass has been finely tuned already in Merrick.
Good for him.
Unbelievable, Dave. The thing that is really heartening here, I mean, we're only obviously three, today will be day three. We've had, the smooth sailing so far, and you got a big carryover today in the pick five. We got the force out on the Empire Six, but give everybody a feel for, how everybody is faring, internally, and this has got to have really settled a lot of people's nerves.
Yeah, this came at the right time, no doubt. I talked to several of those, smaller outfits, and they were just, if this had gone on another 2 or 3 weeks, they might not have been able to survive it. And so this does come around at the right time for them. And, we're jam-packing a lot into a small time frame here, 40 stakes in 25 days. And the races are just, extremely, extremely difficult. The horsemen and the handicappers, I'm sure, as yesterday played out with some of those long shots coming in. But there is just a positive out. Even like a race like Sunday's First Defense, which is just a head-scratcher, 14-horse field on the grass. Talking to some of these trainers, as much as they were like, wow, that's some race, they said, look, their owners are just happy to be able to run, happy to have their horses in the entries. And they're not happy that they can't come to watch them, but they're happy that they can, live, but they can watch them on TV, and they're just happy to have opportunities again, and I think that's the big key.
Well, and I can pitch in that we've already had 2 days in a row of races not going, Dave. So I'm in prime complaint form with the racing office.
I think it's funny. There's 10 races tomorrow. There probably could have been 12. Sunday. There probably could have been 12. And it's just a matter of just being able to accrue enough purse money from handle to be able to offer the races that they want to offer. So I know it's frustrating for those who didn't get in or whose races didn't go, and they're not going due to lack of entries. They're going due to lack of, we need to ration out the purse money until we accrue some more purse money.
Well, and I don't think I don't think you have to rush either. I think that you go in an orderly manner and, keeping the full fields and I think that there's a certain benefit to the way this is, already gotten underway. So we'll watch and looking forward already till, next week, the Ogden Phipps. The week after is Belmont Day, of course, with four grade ones. I mean, we got, just so much to look forward to. Then in July, when July rolls around, we got the Manhattan Metropolitan Saturday. I mean, every day a steak, and every Saturday particularly, something really big to look forward to. The two-year-olds are going to, you know, continue to filter out as well. Dave, let's get a couple of feels for Saturday for the steaks tomorrow. Give everybody your graded steak rundown.
I will go chronologically. I mean, these are pretty difficult spots here as well. The Fort Marcy, Chad's got all these horses in there. I mean, I think I'm interested to see the Slop Shot. First time U.S. ran against some really good horses in Europe throughout his career. I mean, the horse was second to Top Pass. I'm not sure if I said that right, but another horse that Peter Brandt owned, who was basically a top-rated three-year-old last year in Europe. And then this horse was third a couple times, the horse called Hedman, who's a pretty solid horse. Don't see a lot of pace in the race. I thought a Flop Shot could maybe get an attending scenario that he could be dangerous first U.S., first for Chad. And then some like it hop, the mile and eighth nature of the Fort Marcy, you got to put some like it hop around, a long shot that I know my colleague Marcus Hirsch put in his plays for the DR game plan. The horse has already won once at a mile and eighth, even though it wasn't supposed to be a mile and eighth race, but he did win back at Saratoga 2 summers ago. And he's another one who could be forwardly placed. And, if the pace doesn't materialize, those two horses, they could be, they could run around the track maybe 1-2. Of course, that I'm interested in also is Social Paranoia, though I wonder if a mile and eighth could possibly be a little too far for him. The Westchester came up strong with a horse, obviously the return of Code of Honor. Last year, Travers winner, Jockey Club Gold Cup, elevated first in that spot, and Chev's pretty high on how he's done over the break, and I think he'll be very difficult to beat in his return. Endorsed for Bill Mott, he ran a very good race last time at Oaklawn Park, and you got to give him at least a recency edge, and he beat a pretty solid field. I mean, it was an allowance race, so I think there were some horses in there that were looking to get in the Oaklawn handicap in that race overfilled. And then sort of a wild card for Chad, and there's Payne. He's won three in a row, all at Aqueduct, all in one-turn races, and now he gets a stiffer test going up against a horse like Code of Honor. We go back to the grass, and I guess the most interesting thing about the Intercontinental is the return of Newspaper of Record. Which one do you get? Do you get the one who was the brilliantest two, or do you get the one that was the bust at three? And I guess we won't really know. Now, she's speed, and I guess an interesting development here would be what do the connections of Jakarta do? Jakarta is a very fast horse. She's entered in this race. They also entered her back in Sunday's first defense against the boys. And if they go there, it might take a big pace player out of the race. So I think you need to pay attention because I don't see a whole lot of other speed in this race. If Jakarta comes out and goes to that spot, Newspaper Record might be loose on the lead. And we'll wrap it up in the Carter. Very strong race in the Carter. Interested to see Brent Fire, Performer, Tacoma, and Mind Control. Mind Control might be the most underappreciated multiple grade one winner that I've ever seen. Fires every time, with the exception of the Breeders' Cup Juvenile as a two-year-old. And he showed a new dimension last time. Not by design. He kind of bobbled out of the gate and was further back off the pace than he wanted to be. But he has the ability. And Johnny's back on him, done Saturday. I think he'll break sharp and be right there, and I think they have him to beat.
It is funny about Mind Control, and when he comes to New York, he brings his A game, and yet whenever we have these conversations, he's never top of mind, or never. The premier portion of the conversation, and it is notable too. His stablemate always shows up on the same days, on the same weekends. The Jovia runs, of course, in the Westchester.
Yeah, I think that's out of a lack of another spot to run. They'd like to run him in the three other than. I think this is a tough spot. I know he ran well in the Belmont last year, and give him credit for the third place for Belmont, but. I'm not really sure what this horse wants to do. Do you? I don't know if he wants to sprint, if he wants to go a long one-turn race like this one, or if he wants to go two-turn. I don't know. He's done a little bit of everything fairly well. If he gets to do anything great, I'm just not sure what he wants to do. It will be the first time that he's coming off throat surgery, so if you want to take that angle, maybe he couldn't breathe in the spine, but he's going to have to breathe the same air as Code of Honor. I don't know if he's up for that day.
Well, and others. I mean, it's a deep, it's a definitely a deep group. You mentioned the First Defense, win, coming back and excited. And of course, Mrs. Weber, quite excited about Tappet to win yesterday, Dave. And Andy Beyer is still got the abacus out and the protractor, still trying to determine a figure for that huge effort.
Yes, I'm told that there was a little bit of some questioning about the time. I'm told the time is now confirmed as being accurate. And I'll also tell you that even though this horse is not nominated to the Triple Crown, they plan to supplement to the Belmont Stakes. It only costs $15,000 to do that this year. So I think you might actually see this horse come back in the Belmont Stakes. When he's trained by Mark Cassidy, who's never afraid to run a horse back in short rest, i.e. Shamrock Rose, i.e. Scott Stormy last year.
Very much. Dave Grenig, everybody. DRF Grenig. The big day, the first big Saturday at Belmont Park. And it's been a great couple of days so far. Today's a big carryover. Looking forward to it. I've just made my changes, and I'll get it over to the website shortly. Want to thank Dave and Ron Gear, King J. Pribman, Hammer, Nick Tamaro, Brad Free, Marty McGee, and Casey, of course, on the board. Good luck today in the carryover sequence and everywhere else you're playing. Lots of good options. Don't forget the NHC free roll tomorrow. Three people are going to win their way to Vegas. Good luck, everybody. Talk to you Monday.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Developed by Horsemen, horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, environment-friendly, paperless revolution of how equine industries bill and receive payments. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for each horse, whose owners can pay through the same website with just one click. Say goodbye to stacks of invoices, handwritten checks, and postage costs. Easy accounting for all parties with the highest online security measures. Get started free at horsebills.com. Simply register with your name and email address. Free to sign up. No subscription fees to vendors until the first invoice. Voices sent. For owners, you get a free account, comprehensive dashboard with information on all horses owned and billing records, ACH and credit card payment options. For vendors, generate invoices efficiently and receive payments quickly from both owners and other vendors. Syndicate and partnership managers get flexible billing and payment options to both vendors and syndicate members. For more info, call 888-938-4643, 888-938-4643, or log on to horsebills.com. That's horsebills.com.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
DRF Sports Forum Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Forum delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp